This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
When it comes to Father's Day, some things never change. Dads want steak. And there's still time to deliver uncompromising quality and flavor with delicious gifts from Omaha Steaks. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD when you shop omahasteaks.com today. We know, being your dad means he already has everything he could want. But just picture the look on his face when he sees those extra-aged USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy air-chilled chicken, beefy burgers, and more. With carefully curated gift packages from America's original butcher, it's never been easier to show everyone why you're dad's favorite. And every bite is 100% guaranteed to bring a thrill to the king of the grill. Hurry, there's still time to give dad something incredible for Father's Day. Shop now at omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
On the evening of July 24th, 2006, Sean Dickus came home from work to his house in Franklin, Indiana. When he went inside, he discovered the bodies of his wife, 26-year-old China, and his 10-year-old son, Blake. They had both been brutally murdered. The police investigated and found out that there had been a string of burglaries around the time of the murders, including one just four houses down from the Dickus home on the same day. Despite a thorough investigation, no suspect has ever been identified. It's been more than 18 years since China and Blake were killed, and the police are still searching for the person responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective, and each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you out there have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. All right, I'm not going to spend too much time on the opening here. I really want to dive into China and Blake's case. I will tell you that there is a running theory regarding what happened to them that I know the police are heavily set on. And this is one of those few cases where I actually have a difference of opinion where I think another theory might even be more plausible, but we're going to go through the investigation. You can develop your own opinions. I'll give you one of my theories at the end and we'll see where you guys stand. So with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. Blake Michael Dickus was born on February 21st, 1996 in Indianapolis, Indiana. 2 years later, his parents, Sean and Christina, separated and began sharing custody of their son. Blake remained close with both of his parents. In 2003, when Blake was around 7 years old, Sean married China Lynn Anderson, who was known for making everyone around her feel as comfortable as possible. China and Sean had a very loving and close relationship. China's mother told the Indianapolis Star that the couple certainly were in love. And while China didn't have any children of her own, she loved Blake like he was her own son. On June 20th, 2006, China and Sean bought a home in a new housing division. This neighborhood is just off US 31 in Franklin, Indiana, around 25 miles south of Indianapolis. The Indianapolis Star reported that when the couple bought their home, located in the 1100 block of Aberdeen Drive, the subdivision was still under construction. Several homes were completed and occupied, however, many were still empty and had sold signs in the front yards. It's also important to note that there were empty homes on both sides of the Dickus house, along with another house across the street. Sean and China were really happy to move into their new home along with Blake. It had been a big goal for the couple and they were proud to achieve it. The family quickly settled into their new house, and by mid-July, Sean and Blake were spending a lot of time together. They started weight training and practicing martial arts, and on the weekend of July 22nd and 23rd, they went to the county fair. Summer was winding down, and Blake was about to start fourth grade at Needham Elementary, where he was known for being quiet, polite, and a math whiz. Tragically, Blake would never get to start school. On July 24th, Sean came home from work a little before 5:15 p.m. When he walked into the garage, he noticed the door from the garage to the kitchen was open. This wasn't too unusual because sometimes China would be home and would leave the door open so she could greet him. But when he got closer to the door, he realized China wasn't there. Sean took off his shoes and walked inside, and to his horror, he found China and Blake both brutally murdered. He immediately called 911. When the police arrived, they looked over the scene, which was beyond horrific. The Franklin police chief later told the Indianapolis Star that the crime scene was the, quote, hardest one he's ever been involved in. Blake and China were pronounced dead at the scene. Autopsies later revealed that 26-year-old China died from multiple stab wounds, while 10-year-old Blake died primarily from a blow to his head. However, it should be noted that asphyxia and multiple stab wounds also contributed to his death. Details about the locations of the stab wounds or what caused them were not released to the public as an investigative tactic. The police have also not disclosed where the bodies were found in the home, whether China was sexually assaulted, or if there were signs of a break-in, although I will say, I was watching a video interview with Detective John Borges, who appears to be the lead detective on the case, and I quoted him saying, no signs of forced entry. So, a little contradictory, but I'm going with the no signs of forced entry because I saw that with my own eyes when he said it. The only information that was released is that police did find blood throughout the home, and there was a 2x4 recovered, which also had blood on one of the ends. And when we consider the autopsy reports and how Blake was killed, it's more than likely that this 2x4 was used during that assault. The police also interviewed Sean, and according to the Daily Journal, he explained that on the 24th, Blake was still staying at his and China's place, but he was supposed to go to his mom's house later that day. Now, I will say, again, I was watching this video interview, True Crime Daily, and Christina, Blake's mom, was on there. And what's tragic about this is earlier that day, probably around 11:30 a.m., China called Christina and said, hey, listen, I know he's already supposed to be home or at your mother's house. That's where she was supposed to drop Blake off, was Christina's mom's house. But she said, hey, Sean is coming home for lunch around 12:30. Would you mind if Blake stayed until then? And then I'll bring him to your mom's. And Christina said, sure, that's no problem. But if you watch this video interview, it really just breaks her down because in her eyes, and I understand where she's coming from, she just keeps saying, you know, what if I said no? What if I told her, no, that's not okay. You have to drop him off now. If she had done that, maybe Blake would still be alive. But I won't even save this for the end. Christina, you can't put that burden on yourself. There's no way you could have known what was going to happen and what would be the big deal about Blake seeing his father before coming home. So you're a good mom. You did nothing wrong here. The monster who's responsible for this is the one to blame, not you. So after that call, lunchtime came and Sean went home to spend time with Blake and China. He worked nearby, so he often went home during his breaks. And at around 1:30 p.m., China did speak to her mom on the phone. 10 minutes later, Sean left the house and went back to work. Now, going back to those video interviews, there's also a conversation with Sean. And he says something very interesting. He says, I leave to go back to work. I say bye to Blake, I kiss him, rub the back of his neck, and then on my way out, China was at the mailbox, so I kissed her and said goodbye as well. I want you to remember that, because we're going to come back to it later during the perspective. Now, Sean returned home just before 5:15 p.m. He didn't expect Blake to be home because he was supposed to have already gone to his mom's. When Sean got inside his home, he, quote, noticed things weren't right. He, quote, proceeded through the home and found his worst nightmare. Now, as I said earlier, immediately after finding China and Blake, he called 911. As you would expect, the police immediately started looking into Sean as a potential suspect. He gave his fingerprints and DNA and underwent extensive questioning. The police also searched his computer, email, and the trash cans at his work. They didn't find anything suspicious. According to the Indianapolis Star, the police also spoke with neighbors who initially said they didn't hear anything out of the ordinary on the 24th. One neighbor did say they saw a truck pull into the Dickus home around 11:30 p.m. on the 23rd. A man allegedly got out, walked up to the home, and then got back into his truck and drove away minutes later. Now, they've never found this person. We don't know exactly if the neighbor is accurate with the date and time. As I've said before, they can be off by a day or two, but still something worth noting. On July 25th, the police announced that they had interviewed more than 50 people, including friends and family, but they had no suspects in the murders. They were still examining the evidence, hiring a blood spatter expert to reconstruct the scene, and following tips from neighbors and family members. Now, we have a lot more to go in this story, but let's take a quick break.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Now, the Daily Journal reported that the police were also investigating a burglary that happened on the 24th in the 2500 block of Woodfield Boulevard, just 4 houses down from the Dickus home. The police told the media that there wasn't any immediate evidence that the burglary was connected to the murders, but they were still looking into it. Now, this burglary had been discovered hours after the murders when the homeowner arrived home late that evening. They told the police that the burglary had happened sometime after they left at 9 a.m. in the morning. When the police inspected the outside of the home, they found that the intruder had cut the screen of an open window. Inside the house, a steak knife with a wooden handle was found in the office, and it was collected as evidence. The next day, the police found out that there were actually up to 5 burglaries within a half-mile radius of the Dickus home, which occurred during the daytime on weekdays between June and July 2006. In each case, the home was ransacked, refrigerator doors were left open or had been rifled through, and small items such as cash, coins, jewelry, food, or even drinks were taken. None of the burglaries had been solved at that point, and as of this recording, that still remains the case. Now, we're going to touch on the burglaries throughout this episode, but I will tell you on the surface initially, it's a big jump to go from unoccupied burglary to double homicide, especially of a woman and a child. Is it possible? Of course it is. But you also have to consider the items that were taken. These are quick grabs. Yes, they're in there for a while, but there probably was some casing or some intelligence gathered about the house to know the patterns of the homeowners, where the intruder or intruders could go in there, grab the items they wanted, and get out as quickly as possible. But again, we're going to go throughout the episode and continue to talk about this because burglaries are a big factor in this case, and law enforcement definitely believes there's a possibility it's all connected. Now, by this point, the Franklin police had a lot of evidence and information to sort through, so they teamed up with the Johnston County Sheriff's Office, the Greenwood Police Department, the Cumberland Police Department, and the Indiana State Police. By July 27th, the police have received more than 50 tips and had interviewed even more people. They were also still searching the Dickus home, combing for additional evidence. They wanted to take their time and make sure they documented everything. On July 28th, the Franklin police chief sat down with the Daily Journal to discuss the ongoing investigation. He explained that there were still no solid suspects and that they were taking a broad approach. They were committed to a thorough and proper investigation and were prepared for the long haul. When asked if Sean was a suspect, the chief said, quote, "Sean has been nothing but assisting us with this investigation. He has had a cooperative attitude with us." By July 29th, the police had finished searching the Dickus home, taking truckloads of evidence with them. They began reviewing all the evidence and prioritized items to be sent to the state lab for analysis. Now, this is important to mention here because I don't think a lot of people think about this, but when you have thousands of pieces of evidence, if you watch TV or the movies, you automatically think, oh, just send it all down there and the lab will just go through it. That's not the case. There's only a certain amount of manpower there, and there's other cases that they're working on as well. So as investigators, we have to pick and choose what we feel is the most viable pieces of evidence to have analyzed. Because if you send down 100 items, it's going to be a very long time before they get to it. So you're forced with the difficult decision of going through all the evidence and trying to guess what items were most likely to be touched by your potential suspect. So it's a really difficult choice to make, but it happens every day. Now, on August 1st, a state police helicopter took aerial photos of the Dickus home and the surrounding area. The next day, the police collected even more evidence from the Dickus' backyard. By August 3rd, the FBI was brought in to help, and Sean told the Daily Journal that he was very happy about this decision because the police could now use the FBI's resources. On August 10th, the Franklin police chief told the media that Sean was not the focus of the investigation. They ruled him out after he passed a polygraph test administered by the FBI. Additionally, there was no financial motive for Sean to kill his wife and child, as the couple did not have life insurance. The chief revealed that although the investigation remained broad, they had not ruled out the possibility that China and Blake knew their killer. Sean then told the media that since the investigation began, he had tried to think of anyone who would want to hurt China and Blake, but he couldn't think of anyone. They hadn't fought with anyone, friends, family, neighbors, no one. After Sean's comments, the investigation and media coverage slowed down significantly. In February of 2007, the police disclosed more information about the burglary that had occurred on the same day of the murders, just four houses down from the Dickus home. They had hoped that by sharing details about some distinctive items taken during the burglary would potentially help gather information about the murders. The list of items the police released were as follows: a high school class ring from Maine Township, East Park Ridge, Illinois. One side of the ring had an American Indian with a banner stating the word Warriors and the year 1968. Other missing items included bicentennial coins with the years 1776 through 1976 on them, including an Eisenhower dollar and a Kennedy half dollar. And possibly the weirdest item missing was a 1 gallon Tupperware pitcher of lemonade. Now, the police believe that someone might have seen a person walking around the neighborhood with this pitcher, or might have found the pitcher abandoned, and either way, this could link back to the burglaries and therefore could also link back to the murders. Now, the police didn't say what else, if anything, was stolen from the home. They also didn't elaborate on any possible connection between the burglary and the murders. They just wanted people to call in if they had any information about these distinctive items. In addition to the distinctive items, police also wanted information on suspicious vehicles or people whose behavior had changed in the last 6 months, or if anyone had seen someone with unexplained cuts or bruises on their hands or arms around the same time as the murders. And this is obviously a good approach because you don't want to get tunnel vision as far as these burglaries being connected to the murders. You may be missing something, so if someone comes forward and says, hey, I saw so-and-so around that same date and time with all these cuts and bruises on their hands and fingers, and when I asked them about it, they really didn't have a good answer. This individual, this may be the first time you're hearing about him, but once you start to look into them and reverse engineer it, they may connect back to the area of the Dickus home. You never know. You have nothing to lose, everything to gain. Same thing goes for unidentified vehicles. You want to follow every lead, regardless of how unlikely it may be. All breadcrumbs matter until they don't. Now, in July of 2007, at the one-year mark of the murders, a detective told the Indianapolis Star that solving the murders was the agency's number one priority. The detective said tips were still coming in and the police were still working on the case. He also mentioned that they were following up on some people but didn't have a specific suspect in mind. The following month, the police announced a $10,000 reward and also put up a billboard. For the two-year anniversary, friends, family, and the first officer on scene held a memorial near Needham Elementary School. The Daily Journal reported that Blake's mom, Christina, addressed the public saying, quote, "If there's anybody out there that knows just anything, just please help." She talked about how her life had changed forever when Blake died. She struggles to get out of bed, fears for her safety, and constantly looks over her shoulder. She said, quote, "It's not fair that somebody took my child from me, and they don't deserve to be out there running the streets." By July of 2010, 4 years had passed since the murders, and detectives were still receiving tips, but for the most part, they were rumors or flat-out lies. I was actually looking into one lead where a prisoner out of Florida wanted to admit to the murders, but law enforcement followed up on that, and it was just a complete lie. The guy had nothing to do with it. Just very demoralizing, and it takes away from the case. Overall, detectives had followed more than 500 leads and collected DNA and fingerprints from over 200 people. They said the case was solvable and not yet cold, although they admitted to being frustrated by their inability to solve this investigation. Detectives told the Daily Journal that they hadn't determined a motive yet. Everything was possible until the case was solved. However, the main theory was that the murders were connected to a string of burglaries. They collected fingerprints, palm prints, and DNA from the burglaries, but hadn't matched any of it to a suspect. The detectives did qualify by saying they weren't 100% sure that the burglaries and the murders were related. However, they wanted to question the burglar or the burglars about the murders. They said, quote, "If we solve those burglaries, that would put us one step closer to ruling them out or into our investigation." Detectives also said they considered the possibility that the killer was just passing through. However, this didn't seem very likely to them because the neighborhood isn't a part of the city that would be difficult to find if you didn't know the area. Now, I get where they're coming from on this, but just because it's highly unlikely, it doesn't mean it's not what happened. And we're going to dive into that in the perspective as well. The investigators ended their statement by saying they review the case often just to make sure they didn't miss anything. And when they hear of a case similar to the Dickus murders, they always reach out to that department to see if it could be related. Now we have more to go. We're not done yet. Let's take our last break. We'll be right back. By July of 2014, 8 years had passed since Blake and China were murdered. Christina had helped create a crime tip reward fund, offering up to $25,000 for information about the case. Christina told the Daily Journal that she is begging for people who know something to call in. She said, quote, "I know it won't bring my son back, and it won't bring China back, but it will at least take the person off the street so they can't harm another person again." The following month, China's mother passed away without finding out what happened to her daughter. The police went through her home looking for things that could help them with their investigation, like yearbooks and letters. They wanted to see if there were any old friends or ex-boyfriends they were unaware of, and it's unclear if they found anything of importance, but I'm glad to see that they did this. You never know what you're going to find. In June of 2015, the police presented their case to the VDOC Society. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the VDOC Society, it consists of members who are forensic professionals, current and former FBI profilers, homicide investigators, scientists, psychologists, prosecutors, and coroners. They all get together, review the case, and then based on their experiences, they'll provide new insights or recommendations for the investigators working the cold case. So after meeting with the VDOC Society, the police received two key pieces of feedback. One was to continue investigating the burglaries, which had not been ruled out as being connected to the murders. The second recommendation was to retest some of the evidence for touch DNA. Now, what that really means, we may never know. What I can tell you is that in these meetings, the VDOC members are given everything. They have access to all the reports. They get all the inside information. There's obviously a confidentiality agreement within those four walls when they're talking about it. So their recommendations to retest certain pieces of evidence for touch DNA, that may not make sense to me or you, but based on what they saw in those reports, there was something in there that they felt deserved a second look. The following month, the police said they were still looking into the burglary angle. They released new information about the string of burglaries, noting that in all five homes, a screen had been cut in a T-shape. Now, in addition to this T-shape, looking at some of the photos from the other burglaries, it looks like the way the house was gone through, the way it was rummaged through, was also consistent with the same perpetrator. All the drawers were pulled out, the refrigerator doors were open, everything was kind of scattered the same way in each house. Now, I will say this, the police did not say if the same thing was found in the Dickus home. They were only releasing this information, hoping that someone might recognize this type of behavior and recall if their house had been burglarized in a similar way. Now, I know they're not saying that it was found in the Dickus home, it does make me wonder if that was the case. I know that I said earlier that Detective John Borges said there were no signs of forced entry. Maybe they're not viewing the T-cut screen as a way of forced entry. I would say that could technically be considered forced entry. We don't know if they went through or not. But as far as the drawers being rummaged through and all that, we don't know if that's the case in the Dickus home. But the fact that they keep coming back to it, my gut tells me there has to be a similar pattern of behavior in the Dickus home, or they wouldn't be concentrating on it so much. I could be wrong, but that's where my gut intuition is. Now, July 2016 marked 10 years since the double homicide occurred. Christina spoke to the Daily Journal about her son, Blake. She said it was hard to imagine what Blake would be like at 20 years old. Instead, she holds on to the memories of him. She has kept his old toys and even had a blanket made out of his old clothes. She also has photos of him everywhere around her house. Around that same time, the police said the investigation into the Dickus murders remains a top priority. They followed up on all the tips and leads and continued to ask anyone with information to come forward. Unfortunately, there have been no major updates since this last statement, but we know that the families of China and Blake Dickus are still desperate for answers and will never give up until they get them. All right, let's dive into this perspective because I've been wanting to get into it since the beginning. We went over all the information. There's two theories I'm looking at here. And the first one we'll talk about, we talked about the entire episode, and that's this was a burglary gone wrong. We talked about the string of burglaries in the area. Could you have a situation where the killer or killers went to the Dickus home and the original intent was just to break in and steal what they could? There's a possibility that when they went inside, they were surprised by China and Blake being there, and there was an assault that occurred. They realized that if they didn't kill them, they could potentially expose them and implicate them in the crime. So they hit Blake with the 2x4, they stabbed China, and then they went back and killed Blake to make sure that he was no longer with them, and then they fled the area. Is that possible? Of course it is. And I do agree with law enforcement's methodology that in order to definitively rule that out or rule it in, they have to find the people responsible for those burglaries, because I do agree with them. I do think that all those burglaries are connected to one another. So if there's an MO in this particular case that we're not aware of, and what I mean by that, there's evidence at the Dickus home that suggests this house was also burglarized by the same individuals, well, then we have to speak to them, because if you get them, then you may crack open this whole case. But what I don't want is investigators to get tunnel vision and solely focus on this or put this case on ice until they are able to identify the burglars, because there's a real possibility that even if they find those individuals, they may not be responsible for the murders at all. So I don't want us sitting on our hands thinking, hey, solve the burglaries, solve the homicide. Just because they were in the same area, it doesn't mean they were connected. And just because they were around the same time, it doesn't mean they were connected. I'm not accusing investigators of doing that. Again, I'm sure they're being very careful about what they release and about what they don't release. I just want to make sure that we're looking at other scenarios, regardless of how unlikely they might be. Which brings me to the second theory that I want to talk about, which I think is very plausible. I know that they said that because of the area, it wasn't likely that it was someone who just happened to be passing by, but all it takes is one time. And I want to go back to some of the facts that I had talked about during the episode, because I think they're important. If you remember, I said that Sean was in the house, he said goodbye to Blake, and then as he was pulling out of the driveway, he kissed China as she was at the mailbox. And based on everything we know, whatever happened to Blake and China happened almost immediately after Sean left. Why do we know that? Well, as I mentioned earlier, China had called Christina to ask if Blake could stay a little longer before she dropped Blake off at Christina's mom's house. So the assumption is that after lunch, after Sean left, China was going to bring Blake to Christina's mom's. She never did, which tells us she didn't have a chance to. So more than likely, the attack happened almost immediately after Sean left the residence. So what does that say to me? Well, there's a possibility that while China was out at the mailbox, someone was passing by and that person saw Sean leaving in a vehicle. So he sees the man of the house leaving and realizes that this woman is home alone, or at least this offender thinks she is. So once China goes back inside, the offender follows, or maybe the offender is with multiple associates. We don't know, but for this scenario, let's just say offender. This person walks into the house, attempts to attack China, and in the process of doing so, Blake comes down. So the offender turns his attention to Blake, strikes him with the 2x4, and then finishes off China. Then after doing that, he goes back to Blake, and then he flees the area, never to be seen again. This obviously poses a couple problems, because if there's no previous connection, how do you solve this case? Well, that would mean that this case is heavily contingent on someone coming forward with information who lives in that neighborhood. Maybe it was someone they saw passing by. Maybe it's a call from a woman that came in a week or two prior where she was outside and an individual passed by or made contact with her and it was very uneasy and suspicious. All of things have to be in play as well. Again, I know it's a long shot for this to be the case, but with crimes, window of opportunity is huge. But if there's any window at all, that means it's possible. So even though this could have been just the wrong second at the wrong time where China just happened to be outside when this person was passing by, it could just be an unfortunate set of circumstances where that's exactly what happened. They thought she was alone, and that's why they decided to attack her house. One other thing that I want to touch on that's in the same vein as this theory, but a little different. We just talked about the offender passing by at the exact right time. You also have to look at China's whereabouts and her activities leading up to this event. You have to look at where she was going. Was it to the gym? Was it hiking? Was it the convenience store? Was it the grocery store? Was there any complaints by her to friends and family where she said there was an individual who she thought might be following her or who interacted with her and made her feel uncomfortable? You could also be looking at a scenario here where you have a stalker, someone who had saw China out in public and maybe followed her back to the neighborhood and was casing the joint for a few days. We can't forget that a neighbor said they saw an individual there the day before at approximately 11:30 p.m. They walked up to the house and then left. If that's true, did they walk up to the house and leave because they realized that Sean was there? Can't rule that out either. So we have to look into everything that was going on in China's life leading up to this event, because maybe there's something there that investigators missed the first time around. Overall, this is a really tragic case, and I do believe it's going to take someone coming forward with new information to solve this one. But as long as we're breathing, we got to keep trying. So if someone out there knows something, listen, come forward. Even if it seems insignificant, let law enforcement decide how relevant it really is. So let's recap this case for everyone really quickly, just in case you're that person who may have information. On July 24th, 2006, between 1:40 p.m. and 5:50 p.m., China and Blake Dickus were murdered in their home on the 1100 block of Aberdeen Drive in Franklin, Indiana. Around that same time, there was a string of burglaries, and in each case, a screen had been cut in a T shape. Now, the police believe the murders and the burglaries might be connected. So if anyone has any information, you're urged to immediately contact the Franklin Police Department at 317-346-6336. There's a $25,000 reward available. So my final words go out to Sean, Christina, China's family, and anyone else affected by this case. This is a horrific story of two beautiful individuals gone too soon, taken by a monster who's still out there walking the streets. The good news is there is information in this case, and I think police know more than they're saying, although they're still looking to connect those dots. I'm really hoping that someone comes forward with new information that hasn't been looked into before, or a new investigator opens the case, starts from the beginning, and finds something that was missed the first time. I'm going to reiterate something that Christina has said multiple times. This individual needs to be identified and held accountable for what they did, not only for China, not only for Blake, but for an entire community that was affected by this tragedy. That's going to do it for me tonight, guys. Everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.